Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Sans Ronald J. Martin. Ronald is on a sabbatical, Pipe, but he's no longer on a social media sabbatical, I hear.
But he didn't end it according to our rules. He didn't make a big "Hey guys, I'm back." He just sort of posted a normal thing as mm-hmm. if his return was not the biggest deal in the past week. I'm a little disappointed in him.
As though he'd never been gone. As though the world wasn't waiting with bated breath as he made his first tweet.
I mean, I let out a sigh of relief when I saw his Instagram post because it was proof of life.
Was the Instagram related to like beaches and feet and piles of books and great relaxation?
I think it involved his wife and coffee, so which are like two of his top three favorite things in the world. So so no, not quite as beachy as all that. Although he did, once I made fun of him for it, he did text me a picture of feet and swimming pools and palm trees. So
oh, that's great.
You know, wow. He saved that for the private communique to make me feel like a schmuck for sitting here in 40-degree rainy weather.
I don't want to feel like our boy is doing nothing but the hard work of going to coffee shops and talking about his feelings. I want to make sure he's having some pool and beach time too. So what would a sabbatical be without that? But Piper, what would this show be without a quick promo for Lagaris Roasters Coffee? Mm-hmm. If you haven't done so already, go to happyrantpodcast.com. Order yourself a bag of Lagaris Roasters coffee and get your tickets for Live in Louisville too. Together for the Rant, rapidly approaching in April in Louisville.
And actually, a quick word on that. So we still have seats available for those who are wanting to buy tickets. We have a really good crowd coming, significantly larger than our first event, and we were really satisfied with that one. But we've had a couple people reach out who are either Patreon supporters, meaning they support us monthly financially, which you are welcome to as well, listeners. Please consider it. And so for supporting us, we offered a free ticket to the event. They said, well, hey, I'm not able to go either because of timing conflicts or location, but I would love to give my ticket away. So we have two or three free tickets if you are somebody who is flat broke but really wants to be there, or you have a flat broke friend. So you're a college student, a church planter, somebody who has no money because there are – you know, life is hard. Hit us up with a Facebook message or email us at happyrantpodcast@gmail.com. Just let us know. Those are first come, first serve. I'm not going to ask for like your tax statements to see that you actually qualify. I will trust you. So, but we'll hook you up with a free ticket. If that's something that you'd wanted to do, you couldn't afford it. We have a few generous people who have donated their own tickets to it. So make sure to do that as well.
Man, that's amazing, Pipe. That's really nice of our listenership. I feel like we've got a good bunch of people attached to this.
Our
program.
Listeners are way nicer than we are. There's no question.
They really
about
are.
That.
That's the fascinating thing. Like they're quantifiably nicer people than we are. So I wonder what role we fill in their life. I mean, I guess you have to have a friend or two who's meaner than you so that you can feel better about yourself.
I think we fill they say the things we only think and then feel guilty for role.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Which I think I've always filled that role.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You hang around the church long enough, you're going to end up filling that role, I think, at some point. But,
yeah, or you just like you just explode after a while because you keep all of those comments in. I just decided to let them out starting about, I don't know, 35 years ago.
Piper, speaking of things that we both kind of exploded about together this week because you sent me the link, there's a particular thing, Pipe, that I feel like I can set my watch by each and every year, and it's not tax season. It's not opening day of the baseball season. It is the Gospel Coalition's annual foray into articles about why people should or shouldn't play football. This is like an evergreen topic for the Gospel Coalition, and it slays me. It cracks me up each and every time they do a piece about it because the piece is always by a pastor or a seminary professor who – you can tell has gotten bored writing either sermon outlines or white papers. And they're like, hey, I know about this football thing. I'll throw my hat into this discussion, which at each and every each and every Gospel Coalition article about it is completely indiscernible from the last.
And given the fact that I read none of them, I have very objective insights on these articles because I don't read any. I'm assuming they just use the same one from the year before, and last year was 7 points. They chop it up into 12 this year. They swap out the stock photo at the top, something like that. But I mean, it's basically the same. As far as I know, they're not actually different articles.
The only thing that really changes is the name of the author each time. And Pipe, I'm ashamed to say I do read some of these because I am the football player of record in most of my like white Christian dude friend groups. So people will breathlessly send me these articles each and every time they drop.
Is that because you advanced further in football than anybody else, or because you've written the most about it? Like, what makes you so dramatically more football-y than
Dude,
than
I think
others?
Both and I think the fact that I'm still, like, hanging around it, the fact that I still coach, the fact that I still play once in a while, like, you know, everybody's like, dude, you know, you really ought to give this some thought because I know you're in this world. I know you have a dog in this fight, so... it's always very earnest. Yours was the first texted link to one of these articles that was actually like, look how ridiculous it is that this is a thing year after year, which I appreciated because I share your passion for feeling like it's completely ridiculous. But my question to you, Pipe, is why does the Gospel Coalition think they need to continue wading into this issue? It is an amazing thing that you can set your watch by, but why do they keep doing this?
Well, I mean, if there's one thing we know about Reformed blogdom, it's the why you should or why you shouldn't or how you should think about. I mean, like, those are the three paradigms of articles. Why you should do this, why you shouldn't do this, or how you should think about this, which is closely related to how Christians should respond to. That's sort of the subgenre. After a while, you do run out of it. You're like, well, we've covered multi-site churches. We've covered women in the ministry. We've covered, touchy social subjects. We've covered politics.
We've covered hip hop.
We've covered movies. Uh-huh. We've covered fiction, at least as long as Marilyn Robinson is involved. We don't really know any other fiction authors.
Exactly.
And so then the lens turns to sports, and I think sports comes last because these are high-minded people. Sports is like it's the dregs of entertainment in terms of
lowbrow.
You go to the opera, you go to the theater, you go to concerts, then you go to whatever athletic arena. So I think it's just sort of what's left when they've run out of how you should or shouldn't think about other things. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the past it was should Christians watch MMA because violence. Yeah. It's the exact same article as the football one. It's just about guys punching each other in the head instead of running into each other with their heads.
Exactly. You know what I'm ashamed to admit here on the air, Piper, is that I've been roped into contributing to these articles more than once, and I know I've done it for your dad's website. So I did it for Desiring God, like within the year, I did it for them. I know I did it for Christianity Today like 3 or 4 years ago. So I don't know that I've ever done a football related article for the Gospel Coalition. So somebody who's a listener can like weigh in on that if they remember that happening.
If your concussed brain can't remember.
If my CTE addled brain can't quite comprehend whether or not I wrote – you know, some version of the same article that everyone else has written.
And I know I've written stuff like this. I mean, I've never written any article on football that is as long as anything that the Gospel Coalition.
Oh no, these things are, they're marathons. If you can get through, the article, it's proof that you don't have CTE.
Right.
You know what I mean? This should be the metric. Right. This should be the concussion protocol.
Also that you're probably not a football fan.
Mm. Yeah, proof that you have no dog in the football fight at all if you're reading all 5,000 words of this thing. But this should be the thing. So when Kirk Cousins gets concussed next year as a Minnesota Viking and he comes woozily to the sideline,
I can hear the hopefulness in your voice about that.
Yeah. As well. Oh no, you can't. I'm being completely impassive and impartial. But if he were to be concussed, And if he were to stumble woozily to the sideline, I think they should hand him, you know, the NFL, like Microsoft Surface iPad type things they all look at on the sideline.
Yeah, the thing that Bill Belichick throws in disgust and then goes back to using like 3x5 cards.
Dude, exactly. They should be forced to make him pop open a web browser. So this is Kirk Cousins post-concussion, popping open a web browser, navigating to the Gospel Coalition site, and then finding this article and reading all 5,000 words of it. And if he can do that and then articulate some sort of response for the comment section, then he's fit to go back into the football game.
It's the new concussion protocol.
This is the new concussion protocol. It involves a Gospel Coalition article. So he'll go into that little tent. Are they doing that for the pros, or is that just college where they use the little tent?
No, I think they do it in the pros. Either that or they go back to the locker room. But yeah, they do it like out of sight of everybody, which I think is mainly so they can fake it.
Dude, TGC could even like sponsor. They could sponsor the tent. You know, it could have a little Gospel Coalition logo, a little picture of like Don Carson on the side of the concussion tent.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Cousins could stumble in there and then read his article and come back and lead your team to victory, Piper.
Well,
see,
Ben,
how's
Ben
that for
Pays, who is the executive director. I don't know if that's his real title, but he's sort of he's the behind the scenes director of all things Gospel Coalition.
Right.
He is a former Wheaton College football player, and I believe he caught passes from Drew Brees when he was in high school as well. So
he did. He told me that in a meeting that we were at together one time.
So
in which he
does have a dog in this fight, or at least he did at one point. He might have changed his opinion.
I may have told you this story, but this was a meeting for a compilation book that KDY edited.
Uh-huh.
And so it was all these people. This was at the kind of the front end of the Young Reform movement when everybody was still kind of breathless about it, but hadn't met each other yet.
Was still young.
Everybody was still young. Yeah, exactly. Now it's the middle-aged reform movement. But yeah, everybody's still young, kind of breathless, kind of excited to be in the room. You know, everybody hadn't done 25 conferences together at that time. And I ended up being seated next to Ben Pays, who was a nice dude. We talked about the Drew Brees thing in football, but the funny thing I remember about Ben Pays is that Don Carson was the speaker for one of these meetings that we had. And it was like, you know, small conference room type of thing. There were maybe like 12 guys around the table, and Carson comes in and he's wearing the kind of vest that Marty McFly wore in Back to the Future, such that it looked like a life preserver. And Ben Pays drew a little picture of Don Carson in a boat wearing a life preserver and like slid it over in front of me. And I laughed. And
that is a very Ben Pays thing to do.
That's literally the only thing I remember about that entire weekend, in which it was supposed to be an exciting time to meet all these movers and shakers in the reformed world. But I just remember goofing on Don Carson's life preserver with Ben Pays.
That may be why you are doing this podcast with me instead of
and not headlining the Gospel Coalition
or doing a breakout weeks. Or contributing to football articles for them or whatever.
Dude, that very story is just kind of a microcosm of my whole career in a nutshell. Like, I get into the room where I'm supposed to be networking with all these high-powered dudes, and I just want to, like, have some laughs. That's my problem, Pipe. That's why I'm not on the top, you know?
But it is why this podcast works.
It is. It is, absolutely. And this is what I'd rather be doing. This podcast allows me to basically do that for 45 minutes every week. So this is exactly my skill set. So, Piper, speaking of kind of having ha-has at the expense of certain people – or in this case, a certain person, a certain steroidal, very CrossFit-y person. You received a piece of fan mail would be too glowing a term. Hate mail would probably be too strong.
Yeah, hate mail is too strong. It's definitely not fan mail because that implies fandom.
Yes.
It was probably intended as constructive criticism, but definitely was much more of a you guys are better than that, which is, as we've discussed, my favorite piece of criticism.
Absolutely. It's everyone's favorite piece of criticism. So tell us about the piece of mail, Piper, and how you received it and how you did you respond to it? Yeah, I don't know the whole story here. So lay some of this on me.
Yeah. So it went to our Happy Rant podcast email address. So they didn't, you know, this listener or former listener probably at this point, was nice enough not to go dig up yours or my individual email address and basically said, hey, came across the podcast, really enjoyed it, the sense of humor. And then they listened to the episode we dropped several weeks ago about Stephen Furtick preaching from the prone position on a futon, which was delightful for us. It was so fun.
It was a blast for us.
That video was just like – it was Stephen Furtick's gift to the Happy Rant podcast saying, here, you can do an entire episode about this. And we did. But this particular listener said we were so mean-spirited that she had to turn it off, pointed out our disrespectful attitudes, and then concluded the email with, aren't we all on the same team?
Mm.
That – is the question that I now pose back to you, Ted. Are we, in fact, all on the same team?
Are we on the same team as Ferdy? Oh, Pipe, this is a tough question. And there's more that I would like to ask about, but I think you gave enough detail vis-a-vis the piece of fan mail. I wanted to know, like, whose thing she found the most offensive. But that's probably... that's probably fleshly of me to want to know.
This is normally when we get negative reviews, it's aimed at like one of us. It's like, I found this guy likable. This guy's a little stuck up, and Ted is completely bored with the whole thing. That we get that kind of thing where like I'm too critical and rant too much. Ted doesn't seem to want to be here, and mostly people like Ronnie. But she didn't do any of that. She was just like, you guys collectively are mean, and aren't we all on the same team?
Interesting. I do think Ronnie's getting meaner. I think he's gotten progressively meaner. I've started caring more. So I think my level of caring more started, you know, kind of with the end of the Trogues era and the beginning of the three of us. So that's trending upward.
I'm not sure that I've made any positive gains in any direction.
Dude, no, you haven't. You've stayed exactly the same, which is either a compliment or a put down, depending on how you want to take it. But
yeah, is consistency a good thing if it's consistent mediocrity?
Exactly. But back to the question at hand vis-a-vis Furtick and us being on the same team. That's fascinating. And I will have to say this. I have not taken like a deep dive into Furtick's theology. I just know that the bits and pieces that I've seen from him, either clips or quotes or things that he's written, have all struck me as just manifestly ridiculous. So if ridiculousness is a sort of core value of being on the same team, I think I would like to be on a different team if only for that reason. But I have to say I haven't taken a deep theological dive, but I'm not sure that I would find anything that would lead me to believe that we're on the same team, if that makes sense.
Well, and okay, follow-up question. Is ridiculous – so there's ridiculous, like, that's asinine, and then there's ridiculous, like, that's heretical.
Yes.
Like, that's not what the Bible says about things.
Yeah.
Would his stuff fall in both of those categories, more one than the other? Because to
definitely,
me – oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say definitely asinine, but maybe heretical. And that would just be my quick non-theological, like, knee-jerk response to it. But – I mean, I think the Gate little clip that we listened to the other day, it was nonsensical. And something being nonsensical and kind of made up by a person probably qualifies as heretical, does it not?
I think so, especially when you're talking about God. Like when you're talking about interacting with God and you start using like name it, claim it, Zen type of language to talk about getting God to bow to your wishes so that you're claiming gates and whatnot. I mean,
yeah, ridiculous.
It's absurd in a comical way. Like it sounds like utter nonsense because it is. But when you're talking utter nonsense about God, I think that is heresy.
I agree.
And I would like to go ahead and say, I can't speak on your behalf, but it sounds like you were already saying this. I don't think we're on the same team as people who say heretical things.
I agree. And to this listener, we are not on Ferdy's team. Now, if we're talking church softball, Piper, I think I would like to be on Ferdy's team because
no,
I see him.
Absolutely not. He is one of those guys who likes to – he does vanity weights. he looks good. There's no way. There's no way that he can make the throw from like second to first, let alone third to first.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. But he would wear the Oakleys and the stirrups and the baseball pants. He would do all of that with panache.
Yeah, he would definitely wear a sleeveless softball jersey.
Yes, sleeveless softball jersey, a la Jose Canseco, circa 1993, and he would look good getting off the bus. That's the thing; it would put fear into the other team.
Yeah, but then you'd go out in the field for the other. If you were playing against him, you'd be like, "Oh man, watch out for number. What number would he be? Like number 7, probably, because numerology. So watch out for number 7. That guy's got guns. And then you realize they're batting him 8th. And he's playing catcher, and you're like, they're either totally hustling us, or he's really not very good.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it would be interesting. And you're right. You've even talked me out of being on the same church softball team as Ferdy. I wouldn't want that.
Same CrossFit team I'm down with.
Team, absolutely. But not softball. If you're throwing like, telephone poles or flipping tractor tires over a wall, he's your guy, and he would be great at like doing the social media for your CrossFit team, because as we discussed, CrossFit can never just happen in a vacuum. CrossFit is only CrossFit to the degree that you're telling people about what you're doing. So I feel like Ferdy would be gifted in that space too.
Very, very similar to pastoring in that way.
That's true. Yeah. Wow. So, maybe he's right where he needs to be. I don't know. Piper, speaking of, I don't know if we would call Furtick a ministry rock star. We probably would, given the size of his church and the kind of platform he has. I want to lay a story on you, and then I want to talk about rock star behavior that qualifies as appropriate or inappropriate. And in this case, we're talking about actual rock stars, so actual musicians, none of whom are Ronnie Martin. So for the record, Ron, we're not talking about you. Not that he listens, not that he even remembers or cares that he's a part of this podcast right now.
Despite his recent foray into podcasting with the Tooth and Nail podcast, which like 42 of our listeners sent us, and they were like, oh my goodness, Ronnie's alive doing another podcast. He was a guest on that. So he broke his sabbatical to be a guest. Well, they released it. I don't know when he recorded it. But so this is not about that.
Dude, I feel like this sabbatical is almost – it's very subjective. It's like an emergent sabbatical. There are no boundaries to it. It's like –
this is his truth and his narrative.
It's his truth and it's his journey. I'm on sabbatical when it's convenient for me, except that when I want to do something that will further my career quantifiably, I'm calling an end to the sabbatical for an afternoon. I don't know.
If there were royalties attached to this podcast, I bet he would still be doing it.
Dude, okay, I just had a stroke of genius. This is what the Gospel Coalition needs to be writing about Piper, not football. They need to put parameters on what a reformed sabbatical looks like. So, Gospel Coalition listeners and writers, if you're out there, and I know you are, I want 5,000 words with subheadings on what a proper Christian sabbatical is, because we need more law. We need law in this area. Grace is not sufficient for the sabbatical.
And this article would be best coming from somebody who's never had a sabbatical, because that's how the football articles also work.
Yeah, right. So someone who's never even come close to a football field or a helmet or anything football related. Yeah, so ideally this would be written by someone who maybe is a seminary student or a seminary professor, but who has never pastored. So, the further you can be away from actually knowing anything about the topic, the better. I feel like I'm shocked this hasn't happened, actually, Piper. I'm shocked there's not a GECO, kind of sabbatical law kind of thing.
Like a sabbatical handbook or something.
A sabbatical handbook, exactly. Like just a little 5,000 words, something to tuck in your overnight bag when you go to the beach and you're thinking, how do I navigate this sabbatical thing? How am I to think about this? But we've gotten off topic, because we're not talking about sabbaticals right now. We're talking about rock stars. And as you know, Piper, I am the journalism professor, at a Christian college. And as such, I oversee, the student newspaper and the student magazine. And one of my writers, the softest hearted kid I know, just a sweet kid, very sensitive, has a semi-worshipful relationship with a particular band who I'm not going to give the name of. And but I can say that the band is like pretty C-list. You know, they're not playing arenas. Let's put it that way. They're definitely not playing arenas. And they are
the Joe Thorne of bands.
They're the Joe Thorne of bands. They're not playing arenas. They're in that like maybe they're the Stephen Furtick of bands, and that they're in that like kind of pseudo Christian space. In that, like, I think for parents of a certain ilk, they're happy to buy these records for their kids because they're not like full on rebellious. So anyway, my writer went to see this band, came back, wrote a long, immersive, really good piece about it. And tonally, I would say the piece was semi-worshipful. The band apparently was joking around on stage about how they're getting older. So my writer included some of those observations in the piece. And what followed was the band finding him on Facebook and calling him a bunch of unkind names about what he wrote, and also engaging in like several hours worth of, you know, Facebook comment section related arguing with a bunch of college kids. I took umbrage to this, Piper, and I took umbrage not for moral reasons, but for rock star reasons, because I feel as though the least rock star thing in the world to do would be arguing in a Facebook comment section, which strikes me as the most middle-aged lady thing in the world to do. And I ask myself, would Keith Richards do this? Would Iggy Pop do this? The answer is resoundingly no. What do you have to say about this issue, Piper?
You're right. It is not an A-list rock star thing to do. However, it is a generational rock star thing. Like, NBA players do this.
Dude, where they, you're like, right. You're right.
You know, and so, they're like, they are millionaires. They are at the top of their profession. Everybody who criticizes them is purely jealous. Now, your writer did not criticize. He observed and commented. Yeah. That's a different
thing. Observed and commented. Yeah, for sure.
And yet they feel the need to punch down these people. However, if you are a C-list touring middle-aged rock band, I'm pretty sure this is par for the course, especially when, like, you're sitting there with your three generations old iPhone. Actually, forget it. This guy's an Android guy. At the back of some 15-passenger van, because you're not actually big enough to have a tour bus.
Right.
What else are you going to do while sweating it out on the vinyl seats between, you know, Little Rock and Tupelo?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know, and hear this. I respect all performers. I really do. Like, I respect anybody with the courage to get on stage and perform and put their creative product out there to be criticized by the world. I mean, you and I know what this feels like. We've done it as writers, and, you know, it takes a certain amount of courage to do that. And I also understand vanity very, very well. You know, I think I'm definitely on the vanity spectrum. And I also understand how much it sucks to get older. However, yeah, I just felt like, whoa, this is really beyond the pale, like, rock star behavior, you know? Like, because for me, the reason, and maybe this is a function of the era that I grew up in vis-a-vis punk rock and some of the things that I liked as a teenager, but I think you go to see a rock band because they are people who don't care. They sling the guitar over their shoulder, they make loud music, and they don't care. And the not caring is part of what makes them cool. But if you are chopping it up online with a bunch of teenagers, that's just admitting that you're uncool. You know what I mean? Because it's admitting that you care too much about what they think about you. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think it's so ridiculous. I mean, you're not on social media, so you don't get, you know, you don't have the people who just can, like, lob criticism at you so conveniently. But anytime you put out anything publicly, somebody is going to hate on it. Like, the fact is that supportive fans are usually quiet. They just enjoy your work. Very few of them are, like, effusively supportive. So the ones you hear from are usually the ones who aren't crazy about it or have questions, or they pose it. You know, there's some criticism there.
Yeah.
They're almost never worth engaging with.
Right.
And so, especially when you look at it and you're like, oh, dude is 19 years old.
Yeah.
What I want to know what you told your student about that interaction in terms of, like, well, now you've learned a little something about you know,
yeah,
taking criticism as a published writer, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I did. I mean, we had really good conversations along those lines. But I also told him this: if and when you're famous for your writing, if I ever find out that you're on Facebook at 11 p.m. arguing with a bunch of college kids, like I'm gonna find you and I'm gonna give you a beating, right? Because it's conduct unbecoming of a famous person. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, it's conduct unbecoming of an adult, but yes, famous person exactly. Especially.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I think the fallout of the incident was good. I think my writer learned some things about, you know, what jokes to leave on the cutting room floor in an article, and even like not adding people when you like post an article on Facebook. You know, it's one of those things that because he added them, they saw it right away, and you know, otherwise it probably would have been a thing that would have come and gone. But at the end of the day, it was a good learning moment, and but just an interesting thing. And your generational point is well taken, Pipe. And you're right. Like, I had another conversation with another student about, you know, and he asked me, he's like, would you ever create, like, if you were an NBA player, would you create a fake Twitter account to like troll your fans?
Oh, the old Kevin, I was like, the old Kevin Durant move.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't even have a real Twitter account, much less a fake one. I mean, I know there are a bunch of fake Ted Kluck accounts, but like, I'm not involved in any of them. So no, I wouldn't. But, you know, he's like, oh man, a bunch of NBA players do it. And I'm like, I know, but like, I just can't get into that headspace. I can't imagine that being fun. But I think for the people who do it, it's fun. And that's why they do it. And I kind of get it on that level. You know, it wouldn't be fun for me, and I can't relate to it being fun, but you know, I think it is fun for some people, and it brings energy for a certain kind of person.
Yeah. I think it's fun. I think there is there's some level of like insecurity that it shows, or just, or sort of where you see your value and reputation being most shaped, because
yeah,
life is so lived online by,
yes,
by the sort of the current generation. So call it like 30 and under. So
sure.
I'm past that, but not so far past that I can't recognize it.
Yeah.
But I think so like I could see Justin Bieber doing this.
You know, and that, I can see that.
And that man is like a multi-quadrillionaire superstar,
right,
in terms of fame. But
yeah,
I bet if he started taking criticism for certain things like that hit a nerve, he would clap back on Twitter or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever he's currently deciding to use, because he's probably on whatever the latest platform is that will live and die in 2 weeks. And and so I think that there is something there where like that is where the fans really are, and
sure,
that's where reputations exist.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you said, would Keith Richards ever do this? No, but I bet Keith Richards couldn't tell you what Twitter is either.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true. That's
granted,
true.
Keith Richards probably couldn't tell you who he is at this point, so that might not be the best example.
Exactly. No, it's a good point, Pipe. And I don't know. It's interesting to like look at the kind of behavior that we equate with kind of normal fame type behavior, and it is changing, you know. And it's just one of those reminders that
it's so much
we're
pettier.
Getting older.
Like it used to be that when you rose to fame, you were above the fray. Now,
Now
when you rise to fame, you just like the fray comes at you, and so you and you're sort of like it's almost like you're just more publicly petty instead of, you know, publicly classy.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're absolutely right. It's a weird thing. And Piper, we can only hope that, you know, the fame that's about to come our way via Live in Louisville, I hope that we're prepared to handle it, you know. Don't think I haven't thought about that. And you know, maybe somebody writes something unflattering about, you know, about our performance there, and I'll feel completely differently about this whole matter.
I mean, I took heat from a listener a while back for, let's see, what were we talking about? Oh, it was when we did the stories about, you know, when about people reaching out to try to connect. And you told the story about being invited over to that guy's house for what you thought was like an author event. And instead it was like dude sitting around in the backyard. They basically filched a bunch of books from you. And then you and Zach left awkwardly.
Yeah.
And I told the story about a guy reaching out to try to connect and then trying to like schedule me into 15-minute time slots through a digital assistant. And basically the criticism was, the guy was like, you're really good at this podcast, but you're too much of a douche for me to ever think that I would want to hang out with you. And I was like,
he's so wrong.
Wow. Yeah. That's a shot.
Yeah. And that's a real shot.
I had to work hard. I mean, I guess this is me passive aggressively taking shots back at the guy, but, I had to work hard not to like fire back in that instance in some sort of like self-defense or, you know, get into some sort of an insult war because it does, like, those things sting. I'm not a big fan of being thought of as a, like, nobody wants to hang out with me because I'm a douchebag. That makes me annoyed and sad because that's not how I want to be. And then I'm like, the guy's never met me. That's totally unfair. But I get on a tiny microcosm scale where that hits a nerve.
Sure.
And that's when I have to take a step back from social media and go, oh, life doesn't actually exist online. It actually exists everywhere else.
Yeah, that's right, man. And you know, I can vouch for how fun you are to hang out with, and it's in part because you are a douche, but I think you're a douche in the same way that I am.
So as long as I'm a delightful one.
You're a delightful douche, so the hanging out scenarios, you know, work swimmingly for us. But at any rate, Pipe, we have done what we often do on this program. We have hung out and hopefully not been too much like that for the last 40 minutes as we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. But until next time, Rachel DeHeld Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
If you're tired of parenting advice and news headlines that are more confusing than assembling IKEA furniture, we've got just the podcast for you. My dear friend Abby and I are here to help you navigate the parenting roller coaster.
Should your kids be on social media? What should you tell a friend facing an unplanned pregnancy? These are just some of the many questions we tackle on our podcast.
Subscribe to The Real Deal of Parenting wherever you find your podcast.